The stereotypical image of a ham radio operator is someone who is holed up in a basement and tinkering with electronics from a bygone era. But hold on there, that's not the case. The ham radio scene is robust. And in natural disasters and times of crisis, when phone lines and cell networks go down, ham radio operators are ready to assist. We're talking about the ham radio community here in Wisconsin on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Ham radio operators recently gathered in Waukesha to swap parts and make connections at the Midwinter Swap Fest. Mike Johnson is president of the West Allis Radio Amateur Club, which sponsored the Swap Fest for the 47th year. His call sign is WO9B. Mike, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Pleasure to be here.
And Patrick Moretti is with us as well. He is the Wisconsin section manager for the American Radio Relay League. His call sign is KA1RB. Patrick, thanks for being with us.
Well, good morning to you. I'm glad to be here.
So I said your call signs there, but help us understand what they mean and what they do. Patrick, can you explain call signs?
Well, I can a little bit. Originally, the call signs were designed to indicate the region that you were in. As an example, my call sign with a one in it indicates that I got my license in New England. With a nine or zero license, you got your license either in Minnesota or Colorado or one of the other areas that have a zero assigned to it. A two would be New York, Connecticut, New Jersey. Those are kind of regional assignments of the license number based on where you took your test, where you earned your license.
Are the letters then random, or how are they assigned?
Well, the first letters designate the United States. So we have calls that designate that K, the W, the K, the A are United States particular calls. A foreign call, for instance, a French call would start with an F. A German call would be with a G, I guess. The one in Russia would have a U in it. So there are different countries that would have different call bases. Those are all determined by the International Radio Union. That's the way that's set up.
Sure, Mike. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mike. No, go ahead, Mike.
Well, I was going to Mike, I was going to say, you know, both of you are ham radio veterans, but can you help us with a working definition for ham radio novices? What is ham radio?
Oh, golly, ham radio is in its basic form, communicating via radio. So ham ideally would set up a transmitter and a receiver and go out and make contacts with other ham radio operators. In its very basic form, that's what ham radio operators do. That is a stepping stone, however, into far more complex communication techniques, schemes, everything from contest operations to network operations to very serious wise emergency communications and assisting government operations and whatnot, of which I suppose Puerto Rico, the situation in Puerto Rico kind of comes to mind as being the latest, greatest emergency event that ham radio operators played a large part in.
Yeah, help us understand the importance of ham radio operation in times of disaster.
Well, clearly, one of the facilities that ham radio lives in, so to speak, is we don't have the internet and we don't rely on necessarily on communication infrastructure that gets damaged or destroyed in emergency events. So a ham radio operator has a certain flexibility. He needs a power source and an antenna and some equipment and can then establish communications. And the real trick, though, is to establish communications in a useful way that helps facilitate emergency personnel, first responders, etc.
So what would be a useful way?
Well, for instance, one might set up a, going a bit technical here, a VHF link to facilitate voice operations between, say, first responders and a base station. One also might establish something called WinLink, which effectively offers data transfer via email without the use of the internet.
Talking with Mike Johnson, president of the West Allis Radio Amateur Club, and Patrick Moretti, who is the Wisconsin section manager for the American Radio Relay League, and gathering your stories about amateur radio. They are welcome at 800-642-1234. What led you to become a ham radio operator, and what's been your coolest contact? 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Now, Patrick, do you, I understand that because ham radio is its own frequencies, can you actually broadcast on ham radio, or is it only making contacts?
Only making contacts. There are some forms of group transmissions that are authorized for emergency purposes or for training purposes, but generally, by the FCC rules, we are not allowed to broadcast as such. So it's person-to-person contact or person-to-group contact for amateur radio.
And Patrick, you have to be licensed and take a test.
That is correct. We have to have there are three different classes of amateur radio, three different levels, I guess you could call them, for amateur radio. You start off as a technician, that is the what we'll call an entry level, which includes a test that checks your some technical base, and mostly consists of understanding rules and regulations that you're going to have to follow. Some basic electronics, some basic communication skills. Then there's a general test, license for general, which gives you privileges that are beyond the technician privileges that increase the range of your radios and the power of your radios. Actually, not anymore. That the entry level is allowed the full power. So, but generals will have the ability to reach quite a bit further with the types of radios they are able to use.
And hundreds of thousands.
That is more technical.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Hundreds of thousands of people have taken this test. It sounds as if there are a lot of licensees out there.
In Wisconsin, we have 1,700 plus. Licensed amateur radio operators, so that are members of the ARRL, that are actually members of our society. So, yes, there are many in the United States overall. I can't think of the actual number. Maybe Mike has that number. I don't have that data.
Well, there are radio stations at frequencies assigned to the amateur radio or ham radio, and the FCC, as we've been talking about, regulates these frequencies. Hundreds of thousands of people in the U.S. have taken the test to be licensed ham operators. We're understanding more about ham radio and the community here in Wisconsin on the morning show. Your questions and stories are welcome at 800-642-1234. Are you a ham radio operator? Have you ever helped out with emergency communications during a crisis? Or have you met a fascinating stranger? Call in. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll get back to the conversation in a minute here on the Ideas Network. A shout out to Riverland Amateur Radio Club in Onalaska. It's winter field days, the weekend of January 26th. That's when members brave the cold and see how many contacts they can make with other ham operators. We're talking about the ham radio community on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Mike Johnson and Patrick Moretti stay with us. Mike is president of the West Allis Radio Amateur Club. Patrick is the Wisconsin section manager for the American Radio Relay League. And you can join in 800-642-1234. So what's the most interesting thing that's ever happened to you on your ham radio? Who's the most interesting ham radio operator you ever met? Call in, bring on your stories, 800-642-1234. So Patrick, let's start with you. What is the most interesting experience you've had doing ham radio? Looking back through the years, what's been a memorable thing that sticks out to you?
Well, one of the things we have to understand is that just about the excitement of making contacts with strangers is one of the driving points here. Every contact is kind of you throw a line into a big pond and you try to catch a fish. So that's kind of been an exciting aspect of ham radio for me. One of the most exciting ones was when my family and I were camping out on Cape Cod. Well, camping is kind of a hard way to say, because it was kind of late November, early December, and that's kind of a harsh area to be in for that time of year. But my kids and I were out there, and the tent was all set up. We were outside at night. It was beautiful, beautiful dark sky. And we saw this light go across the sky. Well, my kids were, you know, look up and say, "What's that?" And, you know, that's probably the space shuttle. It had gone up. I think it was Columbia that had gone up at that time, and was up there. I said, "Well, what, how do you know that?" I said, "Well, let's see if I can call them." So, you know, but they did look at me kind of, "What are you talking about?" Call them. No, so I pulled on my little radio, and I went ahead and put out a call to the shuttle. I said, "Hey, can you guys hear me? This is KA1RB." And sure enough, I got an answer. And it was the one astronaut on that flight was W5LFL Owen. And we had a very short conversation. He was pretty well gone by the time we actually established contact. But what I can say about that is my kids' eyes were wide open.
That is incredible. What a story. And I'm sure that will still amaze your kids for years to come. I mean, they can't top that.
Absolutely not. No.
Dad placed a call to space. All right. Well, that's a tough act to follow, Mike.
Oh, that is a tough act to follow. That's a wonderful story. I won't even try to top it. That's just too good. But one of the CUSOs that jumps to my mind, and just it kind of typifies a ham radio conversation, was speaking with a gentleman in Sweden who was convinced that the U.S. had gotten rid of Idaho for some reason. And so we spent a 15 or 20 minutes trying to find Idaho on a map. It was very entertaining, and what a wonderful conversation with someone from a foreign country. And that kind of typifies one of the experiences that one bumps into being a ham radio operator. It's a lot of fun and typically light type conversations and entertaining and frankly educational. But Patrick's story has got me beat. I got to say, congrats, Pat.
Let's bring in a call now. Let's go to Joe, who's joining us from Appleton. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. I wanted to make the point that I have never had an amateur radio license. I've always been in it for 40 years or more, listening as a shortwave listener. And one of the experiences I had was the fact of realizing that it's not the strength of the signal, but the strategy of how you get it out. I had known an operator who used 0.5 watt of power to get to Russia to propagate a signal. And the conditions had to be right. The antenna had to be right. That's why amateur radio is a hobby. It was the ability to build something to propagate a signal across the world or to whatever location, depending on how skilled you were in understanding the dynamics of radio propagation. So I listen to these guys all the time. I have equipment. I've just never been able to get up there and get that license. I think now that I'm retired, I'll be able to do that. But that's the difference between amateur radio and the Internet. Everybody says, well, we have the Internet today. We can contact anybody. Well, it's like what he said about throwing a line in the pond. You may pick up some interesting contacts you never thought you could. You can't do that on the Internet. You have to have a specific destination before you can do that. Amateur radio is the ability to contact anybody at any time in any condition using a piece of equipment you designed or you built or an antenna you built to get that signal out there. That was the big skill. That was the big challenge of it.
Joe, thank you so much for the call, and can't wait to hear. Patrick, what is your response to that?
Well, that's wonderful. That's actually quite wonderful. And anytime you want help getting your license, we'll be more than happy to get you set up. There are a couple of very active clubs in the Appleton area, and I'm sure they'd be really looking forward to having you as a member. It sounds like you have a lot of good technical background and certainly the interest. That's great.
Mike, let's probe that a little bit more. Even in the age of the Internet, we really still need ham radio.
Oh, I absolutely couldn't agree more with that. It's traditionally called the radio arts and underscore arts. It's not just something you go and buy a box, set it on your desk and have success at. It's not the case. It takes a fair amount of work. It is a hobby, and it's supposed to be enjoyable, and oftentimes it is, but I can attest, as every ham is, Ken, that that's not always the case. It's a challenging, it's fun, it's rewarding, and it's very, very different than... as the caller pointed out, it's not shooting fish in a barrel. It's as Patrick said, it's casting your bait into the pond, and sometimes you get a hit and sometimes you don't.
Let's bring in Dan now, who's joining us from Milwaukee with a story. Dan, hi.
I grew up in Detroit, and my father and mother were both ham radio operators. His company left Detroit and moved across the state to Muskegon. And my mom and dad kept in touch by ham radio. And then when I went to college in 1957 at Marquette in Milwaukee, my father would call a ham radio operator just to harass me in the mornings to make sure I didn't spend too much time in watering holes around town. He would get me up at 8 o'clock on Sunday mornings or thereabouts. And they would put in what's known as a phone patch and patch the radio call from my dad. He called another amateur operator in Milwaukee who would put together a phone patch and call me in the dormitory until finally somebody got the phone call some Saturday or Sunday morning at 6 a.m. or something like that and explained to him that this telephone wasn't my telephone. It was in the dormitory at Trader Hall, and it served four rooms, and he woke everybody up at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, that is a brilliant story. Dan, thank you so much. Patrick, ham radio, keeping families together and up on the weekend.
Absolutely. Now, that's one of the things that amateur radio did for the military, actually. Nowadays, they go ahead and they have Internet connections, and they are very directly connected. But there are still amateur radio operators that volunteer to provide communications to between soldiers and their homes. The idea of the phone patch was what brought that to my mind. When I was in Vietnam, as an example, I was able to talk to my wife through amateur radio. There were military affiliates would set up a radio connection between Vietnam and somewhere in the United States, and a radio volunteer would take that that connection and add a phone patch to it so that the family could actually talk. And I remember my wife being trained to say over between the conversations. When you finished a sentence, you had to say over so that the our radio operator would know to switch the transmission.
Well, this has been so much fun, and unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Well, thanks, Kate. Really enjoyed it.
Mike Johnson is president of the West Allis Radio Amateur Club. His call sign is WO9B. And Patrick Moretti is the Wisconsin section manager for the American Radio Relay League. Has called an astronaut, and his call sign is KA1RB. Coming up next, our guest says that climate change is a public health crisis, and we'll dive into the way climate change impacts human health. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.